Hello, I am Dr. Manda Chiflaro, and on today's episode of the Super Lead Podcast series, we are joined by Professor Lehlokwa George Mpedi. He is the Vice Chancellor and Principal at the University of Johannesburg, an internationally recognized scholar in labor law and social security. Prof. Mpedi has published widely, and his recent books include From the Bioburb to the Mosquito, Rethinking Leadership Through the African Sayings. And today we are in studio to unpack insights from his latest book, From the Predator to the Prey, Leadership Lessons from the African World and Beyond. Prof, welcome to Super Lead Podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. So allow me to also call you Prof every now and again.
Yeah, of course.
I think also the fact that I'm also in academia, you know, I need to recognize the professor.
Yeah.
So today we're going to unpack your latest book.
Yeah.
From Predator to Prey.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we want to hear about the author.
Yeah.
And on this podcast, we have time.
Yeah.
So if it's at all possible, if you start us as early as possible,
we
can just sort of highlight some of the milestones to where you are today as the Vice Chancellor at the University of Johannesburg.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for having me. I mean, it's great to be here, you know, and chatting to you.
Yeah.
I'm Lehlokwa George Mpedi. I'm a simple man, you know, from a village in the Hammanskraal area.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, when my students are mad at me, they say I must go back to my country. But I'm from Hammanskraal, you know. I'm as South African as it gets. So yeah, I grew up in Hammanskraal, former Botswana.
Okay.
That's where I did my primary schooling. We had middle school in Botswana.
Okay.
So
what happened there?
Yeah, you did primary school
and
then 3 years middle school.
Okay.
And then 3 years high school.
Right.
Yeah, and from there I went to Vista University, where I spent 5 years of my life, studied law, 3 years B Juris. Those days, you know, we had B Juris and B Proc, but I did B Juris, which was 3 years, and then did 2 years LLB. We had that postgrad LLB.
Yeah.
Then from there, I did my master's in labor law at the then Rand Afrikaans University.
We may have to educate our young people here. Oh, the Vista, Rand Afrikaans.
And look, those universities are no longer there, you know, in their previous, you know, form, if I could put it that way.
Yeah.
Then I registered for my LLD. When it was still RAU, but when I graduated, it was UJ.
Okay, good.
So I feel very privileged that when I graduated, it was UJ, because I would be sitting here talking to you as a man with degrees from universities that do not exist. So I'd be like a con man. It's like, remember, there was this university. You know, look, that is my story. The journey that I have traveled academically.
Yeah.
And I started as a researcher. Can you believe it? Look, I taught a little bit as a junior lecturer at then Vista University Mamelodi campus.
Okay.
Then I became a researcher. To cut a long story short,
it doesn't have to be cut.
Yeah. Look, I did everything that you could imagine that one needed to do as an academic, except being a dean of students.
Okay.
I was a student assistant. I made lots of photocopies. I was a researcher. I was a head of department.
Sure.
I did everything. I didn't cut any corn.
Sure.
And, you know, head of department, deputy director of a research center, director of a research center.
Yeah.
Then I was privileged in the sense that I got a job overseas at the Max Planck Institute in Munich, Max Planck for Social Law.
Sure.
In Munich. Yeah. You know, Max Planck is one of the leading research organizations in Germany.
Okay.
And I worked there for 3 years.
Lovely.
Then I came back. When I left, it was RAU. When I came back, it was UJ in 2006.
Okay.
And I never left. So I came back as a director of a research center.
At UJ?
At UJ,
okay.
Then I became an associate professor, professor, HOD, director. I did all sorts of jobs at the same time. Director of a research center, HOD, vice dean, dean.
Yeah.
Then I was promoted to deputy vice chancellor, academic.
Sure.
And now vice chancellor. So this is my last serious job at UJ. So after this, there's nothing for me.
I'm also curious, what happens to vice chancellors after their terms?
Hey, that is a difficult one. I don't want to think about it because I'm not that young, but I'm also not that old,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
So when my time comes, yeah, man, that gives me nightmares because I'll still be fit, hopefully, if my health permits.
Yes.
But look, there are all sorts of opportunities, you know, mentoring young people, young guys.
Co-hosting a podcast here.
Of course, you know.
With us, yeah.
This is a good idea, you know, writing books.
Writing books, yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm Chilitzi now. He's in Japan, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not that I want to follow in his footsteps, but who knows, you know. So I say the future will take care of itself.
Excellent.
Today I have to really work hard.
Excellent.
And the teams that I lead,
yeah,
and wonderful people at UJ.
Lovely.
And take this great university to great heights. I understand you are one of our alumni. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I got my PhD at UJ.
Well,
so
well done.
A very big fan.
But you must be active, you know, in our alumni, and you must also donate. Not just money, but also your time and expertise.
Oh, good. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Yeah, I can do that. I work at another university now,
we forgive you.
Right, so
yeah,
before writing this book, you wrote another first one.
That's right, yeah.
Do you want to kind of just talk about that?
Yeah, there's a story behind that. You know, we talked about my predecessor, Chilitzi Marwala,
yes,
a wonderful guy,
yeah,
a mentor, a colleague. You know, he sat me down. Look, I'm a lawyer by training, and I wrote lots of articles and books, you know, labor law, social security law,
sure,
AI and the law.
Sure.
This is one area
sure
that I'm passionate about.
Excellent.
And he said, look, my brother, in your area of expertise,
yeah,
people know about your talents and everything,
yeah,
but you have to break it down,
yes,
for ordinary people to,
yes,
understand these,
yeah,
complicated concepts.
Yeah.
And I was like, this makes sense. So I started writing op-eds, you know, opinion pieces. He writes a lot also.
He does.
And then he said something that stayed with me. He said, you must also remember to write about leadership.
Okay.
People want to hear your thoughts about leadership.
That is true.
And I was like, this is interesting. Apart from my area of specialization,
yeah,
I must share my ideas about leadership. And he said something interesting.
Yeah.
He said, my brother, when you write books about leadership,
yeah,
you must never forget to put your picture on the cover. So, and he does that. I said, hell, I'm going to do that. So my first book.
So what's the thinking there about
me? I said, no. Of course, you must see that this is me. Yeah, these are my ideas about leadership.
Oh,
so
see,
these are things that are close to my heart. So the first book is called From the Baobab,
yes,
to the Mosquito.
Yes.
Rethinking Leadership Through African Sayings.
Fantastic.
There's a story behind this. So when I was dean, I was dean of the Faculty of Law at the Great University of Johannesburg. So, you know, University of Johannesburg. So what happens, my brother, is that as a leader,
yes,
you give lots of speeches.
Yes,
and
you
I
do.
And I realize that you don't want to bore people. So to drive a point, you know, I always used African sayings.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Stunning.
And people always say, hey, write that saying, you know,
yeah,
write that saying. After I talk to someone, you know, the person will say, please write that saying for
sure,
me.
Sure.
And also international guests. So I said to one colleague, don't worry. One day I'll write a book and I'll send you a copy of the book. But I never got to it. But I kept on compiling these sayings and meanings and so on.
Yeah.
And one day, when I was deputy vice chancellor, just before I took the reins as vice chancellor,
yeah,
I got a call from one of the colleagues that is doing a fantastic job, you know, Professor Mazuma Chola.
Okay.
He does fantastic work in leadership every Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
He convenes, you know, leaders, you
sure
know, around 6 p.m. and
sure
they discuss a leadership topic.
Sure.
He invited me
okay
to come and give a talk. And I'm like, what am I going to talk about?
Yeah.
I said, okay, I'm going to talk about leadership lessons from African sayings.
Okay.
So I talked, and we talked for almost an hour.
All right.
There were people from all over Africa.
Okay.
Nigeria, and we engaged.
Yeah.
I was so inspired. Yeah. I wrote an opinion piece.
Right.
That piece was so well received.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to reach out to Tracy McDonald,
yeah,
who published the first book.
Yes.
So it was a Friday. I'm like, no, I'm not going to write to her on a Friday.
Okay.
I'll write to her on Monday.
Okay.
You know, in case she's tired. Guess what?
Yeah.
That afternoon, she reached out to me via LinkedIn and says, I've been looking for somebody to write a book on leadership lessons from African sayings. I've got my own list.
Stunning.
You probably have your own list.
Yes.
Let's talk.
Oh, wow.
Monday, we talked. By the end of the day, I had a contract. And as they say, the rest
is history.
But now, I'm sure you're wondering, Yes. From baobab to mosquito.
Yes, yes, yes.
These are two of some of my favorite sayings.
Okay.
Baobab, there's an African saying that says, if you think, no, I'm getting them mixed up. The baobab tree.
Yeah.
It says, wisdom is like a baobab tree.
Okay.
You can't embrace it alone. I mean, you are from Venda,
so
right?
Good. Yeah,
you saw how big the baobab trees are. You can't embrace it alone.
That's so good. That's so good.
The mosquito one. It says, if you think you are too small to make a difference, you haven't spent a night with a mosquito. I mean, one mosquito can terrorize you for the whole night. That is the background. So I had to, you know, they say ingom imnandi.
Okay.
Yapin.
Okay. So you had to repeat.
I had to bring another one. So this one, and I don't want to lead you.
No, no, go.
Is a follow-up to that one.
Okay.
Here I got inspiration from the animal kingdom.
Yes.
My family and I mean, we love going to the Kruger. We spend hours driving. We do self-drive.
Sure.
Observing, you know, enjoying nature.
Sure.
You know, and I got inspiration.
Sure.
From the wild animals, and I'm like, there's so much to learn from this.
Okay.
Once again, I got invited by Prof. Mazi at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
He said, my brother,
yeah,
we can't start the year without you,
yeah,
you know, opening this thing. And I'm like, what am I going to tell these leaders? Yeah. I said, okay, leadership lessons from the African wild and beyond.
Okay.
After that, I wrote an opinion piece, well received.
Yes.
I said, let's do a book.
Yeah.
I spoke to Tracy. Tracy said, I can't wait. I got a contract. Here we are.
Oh, wow. It's like the same story. So we're going to sit again here for the third book. And
definitely.
It sounds like it's going to be the same kind of...
No, no, a series. This is going to be a series. Stunning. Because, you know, my thinking is that sometimes we want theories from the worst and so on.
Yeah.
There's so much we can learn. And leadership lessons are everywhere, my
sure,
brother.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm picking up and I'm enjoying about reading your book.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes we might constrain ourselves to say, I'm going to learn leadership the moment I enter through the glass doors of a business school.
That's right.
Or in a leadership workshop.
Yeah.
And from what I'm picking up is you could be doing your game drive and learning a lot about agility, adaptation, flexibility, and all these wonderful things we talk about in leadership.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I thought about engineers.
Okay.
I mean, engineers have got what they call biomimicry.
Yes.
You know about it, where they look at how animals behave to solve engineering problems.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't we look at animals and learn from them to solve leadership problems?
Sure, sure, sure.
You know, this is what inspired
that's
me. And there
so
are people
good.
Who wrote a little bit about that. And I'm like, from our end, you know, I mean, us Africans, we have sayings that we use to inspire us.
Yeah.
We've got totems, you know. We are the people of the elephant.
Yes.
And when we praise ourselves, you know, we refer to how these animals behave. And sometimes animals behave much better than us human beings.
Sure. You know?
And there's just so much to learn.
Sure.
And you'll see how I broke down, you know, these chapters.
Yeah.
And there are positives and negatives. Doesn't mean we have to take everything positive.
Yeah.
There are also negative traits that we should learn from in terms of avoiding repeating the same mistakes.
Yeah. From the animals.
Yeah.
No, stunning. So should we get in and maybe pick a few of these?
Let's do that. Yeah.
Of these lessons we can pick up from your drives at the Kruger. Let's talk about collaboration first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sort of this idea of hunting in packs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say more.
Yeah. Look, if you look at firstly, there are animals that are solitary.
And I love the solitude chapter. We're going to go to it
chapter
soon
three.
After this one.
I
enjoyed. Yeah. Anyway, I'll tell you about it.
We'll come back to that. So there are those animals that are successful as a pack, and there are animals that are solitary.
Mm.
And in leadership, of course, if one, you know, prefers that solitary approach, doesn't mean it's a bad approach. One must always keep in mind that there are pros and cons. But let's focus on those animals that operate in a pack.
Yeah.
They share responsibilities, and as a result, they are successful most of the times.
Yeah.
Let's look at the wild dogs that hunt in pairs, you know, as a pack.
Yeah.
That they share the responsibility, especially in a chase.
Okay.
They tire their prey, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when one wild dog takes the lead,
yeah.
when it gets tired, another one,
yes.
you know, catches up and yeah. then pursues that yeah. prey
like
until
a
it gets tired.
In cycling.
Yeah.
yeah
you
yeah.
know, until that prey gets tired.
Yeah.
So they work as a team.
Sure.
And wild dogs are the most successful hunters.
I see.
And their power is in hunting as a pack. I don't think if they operated as solitary
yeah.
Hunters, they would be as successful as
sure.
they are. And
sure.
they're the most efficient hunters.
Sure.
You know, because if you look at their success rate, you yeah. know, they're the most successful.
Wow.
And they're the most caring because they, you know, they regurgitate their, they eat very, you know, quickly, you know,
yeah.
after they've killed a prey.
Yeah.
And then they go back, they regurgitate to feed their, sickly members of the pack,
yeah.
and also the small ones, you know,
yeah.
that are left behind at
sure.
at the den. So they
sure.
care for the
sure.
for the whole pack.
Sure.
So there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
Lions also hunt, you know,
yeah,
you know, as a pride.
Yeah.
But there, you know, each lion is assigned a role.
Okay.
You know. Of course, they also do hunt, you know, as a pair. Sometimes you find nomads, you know, a pair of nomadic males, they
yeah.
hunt as well. And sometimes solitary females, you know, they would hunt. But generally,
yeah.
as a pride, they do work as a team.
Sure.
Especially hunting big prey that
sure.
they need to bring down.
Sure.
Take a buffalo,
yeah.
you know, that they have to bring down.
Yeah.
But if they don't work together.
As a team,
yeah. they could go hungry for
sure.
days, you know. And that's why there is this African saying that lions, you know, that do not collaborate, do not work well together, they fail to bring down even a wounded buffalo.
Sure.
So it's the power
sure.
of collaboration.
Sure.
Teamwork.
So, yeah, so let's bring it to us now in
yeah.
the boardroom.
Yeah.
Let's just take these
yeah.
learnings
yeah.
and bring them to leading a department at
yeah.
UJ.
Unity is strength.
Oh,
we can all be lovely. Smart, man. Yeah. Take a university.
Yeah.
I mean, professor, to become a professor, you know, you are a doctor.
yeah.
It takes a lot,
it
you
does.
Know. I mean, you need to know your stuff.
Mm.
But if we cannot bring all our,
sure.
you know, our knowledge,
sure.
you know, our ideas together to support and complement each other,
sure.
we will not achieve even the simplest of tasks.
Sure.
When I speak to our management executive team, I always say, we're different people and
yeah.
we need to bring our uniqueness.
Excellent.
I say we always have to bring that. The day we think
yeah.
alike,
yeah.
then is a problem,
sure.
you know, then we don't need each other.
Sure.
But what is critical
yeah.
is that, you know, we find each other and
yeah.
we manage to pull together.
Excellent.
To bring all our ideas, you know, our wisdom, you
yeah.
know, our intellect to gel, you know, so that we can have unity of purpose, and
lovely.
That is what is serving us well.
Excellent.
Unity is strength.
Oh,
yeah.
lovely, lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the chapter on solitude,
yeah,
it opens with this quote. I think I will break it around he who delights in solitude.
Yeah.
It's either he or she is either like a wild beast or a god.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And let's talk about leopards and,
yeah.
and this idea of solitude.
Yeah. I mean, look. Let's start with this. I mean, leopards can move silently.
Yeah.
If I could call it that.
Yeah.
Without making any noise and stalk their prey.
Sure.
And pounce.
Yeah.
And in no time, climb a tree.
Yeah.
And put their kill up there.
Yeah.
And come back later to enjoy and feast and so on. And that helps.
Sure.
I mean, you know, even you walk in a crowd, you make noise and all that, you know, then there's a risk there.
Sure.
Unless you've got, this alignment, you know, of purpose and you know what you want to do. And it's the strength in that, that when you are alone, you know, then you can do things. And there is, I'm not glorifying rap because of the swearing and so on, but there's also wisdom there.
Yeah, yeah.
There
okay.
is this rapper, there's a line in this song,
yeah.
and I won't use the word that this guy's using,
yeah.
but I'll modify it.
Yes.
Basically, he says, the only black man that I trust is me.
so
the leopard, when the leopard moves alone,
yes.
there you know that the only leopard it trusts.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So it can do what it does best.
Sure.
And that is critical because
sure.
it can avoid any unnecessary fights and confrontations.
Sure.
Sometimes a leopard would forgo a kill, most of the time it would forgo its heart one kill.
Yeah.
To make sure that it avoids injuries.
Okay. So its that own injury.
Yeah. Okay. So that it can live to fight another day, to hunt another day. Because any serious injuries, it means it could spell days, you know, of no food.
Oh, I see.
Or even death.
Yes, yes, yes. Because it needs
energy,
self-reliance.
Exactly. Because there are no other.
There's no one else to come.
There's no pack that would provide, unlike wild dogs.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that is critical.
I see.
So you need that balancing act.
Yeah.
So if you are a solitary animal like a leopard, you need to know your strengths.
Oh,
there is strength in being solid, you know, living this solitary life.
Very good.
But at the same time, you need to know that I'm not going to get involved in unnecessary fights with hyenas and overkills and so on.
Sure.
And you eat fast, you take your kill up the tree
and
very high up. You make a mistake, you take it very low, hyenas will grab it, could grab it, you'll go hungry.
Sure.
That is the balancing act.
Oh,
but now, as leaders,
Okay. Now
you have to balance this out. There are leaders, not there are leaders. Of course, let me start with leaders. I know some leaders that prefer to be being on their own.
Yeah.
Now, leaders must be aware of the importance of, yes, there is value in being on your own sometimes, to gather your thoughts, to reflect, and to take a step away from the noise, you know?
Yes.
But sometimes being too
isolated,
you can miss out on the temperature on the ground in terms of where the wind is blowing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just a balancing act.
Yeah.
I mean, there are 48 laws of power. You know, there's this statement in one of the laws, you know, the explanation that being scarce, you know, adds value.
Sure.
So being readily available and so on is also a bad thing.
Sure.
So you need to balance
and,
that.
And on the other hand, you know, leadership, as you say in the book, is seen as this social endeavor where it's constant communication, you are with the people, etc. But there's still value in stepping away, gathering your thoughts, and not be distracted by the noise.
Yeah, and you know, human beings, you know, we're special because people start forming opinions. Of course, you cannot go out there being fearful of people forming opinions.
Mm.
You don't want also to be seen as a leader that is out of touch of what is going on.
Sure.
You know, you have to engage. Sure. So you need to balance this.
Sure.
If you are too isolated from the people that you lead, you end up being out of touch with what is going on, you know, at shop floor level.
Sure.
You need to have a way, you know, of balancing the two.
Yeah. But if you're here the whole time,
it's also not a good thing.
It's also not a good thing. Because I've seen also leaders who hardly ever make decisions. And everything is led through committees after committees.
No. Death by committees. That is also a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because as a leader, you have to make a call.
Yeah.
You have to hear the people out, you know, hear their views, but you have to lead.
Sure.
And sometimes you have to make a decision based on incomplete information.
That's the hardest.
Yeah. But you have to lead.
Sure.
If you sit there and say, I don't know. And such a leader does not inspire confidence.
Sure.
It's also problematic.
Sure.
And then you cannot call committees every time, every little thing. Then you need committees over the color of the book. You can get inputs, you know.
Yes.
You know, I asked a few colleagues, you know, that are close to me.
Yeah.
Or that I saw when I got the cover. I said, what do you think? Also my wife, you know.
Okay.
I asked, what do you think?
Yeah.
But I had to make a call, you know.
Of course.
There were people saying, no, but you are smiling.
And then
I say, so what? I mean, but you talk about the predator that smiles. I say, no, the book is about predators, but I'm not a predator. It was just tongue-in-cheek comment,
Habituation.
Yeah.
What is that about?
Yeah.
I found it interesting.
Look, I mean, take a bad habit, you know. If people get used to a certain type of behavior, it might be a bad behavior, and it gets normalized.
Sure.
And then it becomes a common thing.
Sure.
So one must guard against that.
Okay.
Then it becomes a common thing at a particular workplace. Here, some animals are afraid of human beings. Let me use that as an example.
Yeah.
By their own nature. But because people give them food and so on, eventually they get used to human beings. Yes, and then they expect human beings to give them food. When they don't give them food, then they start taking food.
Ish.
Then at the end of the day, they have to be put down, which is sad.
Sure.
That's why you see signs at most reserves. They say, please don't feed me because you might be signing my death warrant.
Oh, wow.
Because those animals get habituated
to
the fact that when they see human beings, they see a provider of food.
Sure.
But in leadership, if you condone bad behavior, it becomes an acceptable behavior.
Okay.
And then later it becomes difficult to correct that behavior.
Sure. And we see this with top performers, right?
Yeah.
So someone is bringing the numbers, but perhaps how they treat people is not great.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the leader kind of just allows this bad behavior because he's a top performer.
I used to have a senior colleague, we're still in touch, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody who loves the Kruger like I do, exchange notes and all. And when I was dean, he was an HOD, of one of the departments. And he used to say to me, Dean, there is this saying that pardon the bad, injure the good.
Sure. Pardon the bad,
injure the good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right.
You know. And sometimes people say, it's just one time.
Yes.
It's just this.
Yes.
And it becomes a habit.
Sure. Sure.
So as leaders, we need to guard against that certain things. It's like also some things that it starts being this cup.
Yeah.
We talk here, and I know it's not going to be like that. I'm just using it.
Yes, yes.
We talk now, we leave it here.
Yeah.
Right? We're tired. It's over. We switch off the lights. We go.
Yeah.
Instead of taking it to the kitchen. Tomorrow is two cups.
Yeah.
Next week is five. You know, we won't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a habit of leaving things after our discussion.
Sure.
Then later it becomes like, but there's nothing wrong. We don't see anything wrong with it.
Sure.
So as leaders, sometimes we need to guard against bad behavior becoming a habit.
Wow.
And then it will be difficult for us to correct it.
Sure. And I imagine this time, it's a good time to also just reflect on what are some of the things that have now become habit.
Yeah.
Perhaps that.
And how do we correct that?
Mm.
Of course, we also need to correct that, you know, carefully in a way that we don't destroy people.
Absolutely.
Sometimes people don't realize. People do things without realizing that, you know, this is, you know, we need to also explain that, you know, if you do this, these are the consequences of your behavior, and this is why we need to stop it.
Sure. Lovely.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I want to move to learning from the elephant and future-proofing.
Yeah.
What can we learn from the big guy?
Yeah. I mean, elephants, you know, when I see them, I make sure that I stop because we are the people of the elephant. You know? and my family, you know, my wife and son. My wife and son, when we see elephants, if I don't see them, they say, "Oh, we see the Mpedi."
Yes.
They call them with our say name, you know.
I see.
Look, elephants are quite interesting in many ways, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how protective they are. You know how they mourn their own.
Sure.
And memory, they've got, you know, their memory is incredible. You know, they have, you know, the special bond amongst each other.
Yeah.
How they protect their young.
Sure.
That is critical.
Sure.
And us, you know, as leaders, yes, we have to support our senior members of staff, but we have to invest a lot of time, energy, and resources to empower the young and upcoming, you know, members of our teams, because they are the future.
Mm.
And in organizations, we talk about institutional memory.
Yes.
I mean, elephants, the matriarch,
during
dry seasons, you know, will lead the herd, you know, to other sources of water. And that knowledge is passed from one generation to another.
Sure.
So it's part of future proofing to ensure that that type of knowledge is not lost.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, you know, when I joined RAU,
you
won't believe, you know, I was the only black person who I was a researcher.
Sure.
The other black men washed dishes with a white shirt and a tie.
Sure.
But the support I got, you know, I'll always be grateful to the colleagues that supported me.
Mm.
They always said that the word that was used those days was capacity development.
Okay.
And when I look back, you know, I developed goosebumps that sure. this guy had the vision.
Mm.
The support that I was provided is incredible.
Sure.
And I give it to the colleagues, including my doctoral supervisor, Professor Marius Oliveira, and all the colleagues.
Yeah.
This guy saw that I'm somebody that could play an important role.
Sure. Sure.
And they provided me great support. Sure. I mean, I remember when I joined RAU, I came there, you know, in May, no, in April, and I worked for 1 month in May. And in June, I was supposed to go to Germany for 1 month to do research for my master's. I got a bursary before I joined the institution. I needed 1 month to go away to do research.
Yeah.
I didn't have enough leave days, and I was worried about this. I was like, what am I going to do? Mm. I can't afford to be on leave without pay.
Yes, unpaid leave.
Yeah, and I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And they said to me, no, we see this as part of your development.
Oh, stunning.
I got full leave.
Oh, stunning.
With pay.
Very good. Very good.
And then when I came back, you know, years later, when I came back from Germany, there were several institutions that wanted to employ me.
Mm.
But I remembered what these guys did for me.
Sure.
And I rejoined this institution.
Sure. And here and now, you're the vice chancellor.
Although then, if you told me I would be the vice chancellor today, I would have, you know, I don't know, you know, I wouldn't have believed that. So it's part of that. So we have a duty to support our young.
Sure.
But they must also, they must bring their part.
Okay, say more.
Yeah, you know, this entitlement mentality has to stop, you know. People thinking the world owes them. They must bring their part. And one thing they need to remember, this saying that attitude determines altitude.
Of course.
Is important.
Sure.
We worked, man. We never asked why. You know.
Yes.
They said left. We go left. Sure. We went and gave it our all.
Sure.
So is that balancing at future-proofing? Because the future, you know, yes, we are here. We are where we are. But, you know, yes, we did our part, but those young men and women that are upcoming are the ones that are going to take our organizations forward. So we need to support them.
That's true. Yeah. So, because you talk about mentorship in this future proofing, the more I talk to people, the more, you know, the topic of mentorship, you know, it's super important, but it seems it doesn't happen that much.
Yeah.
Leaders such as yourself are busy. Mm. And then, you know, when do you find that time to mentor two or three people?
Yeah.
How are you navigating this?
Yeah. Look, mentorship, you know, doesn't need a committee.
Okay.
And having diaries where you sit down and on. Look, I've got a mentee who's now in New York, you know.
Okay.
He's at the university there in the state of New York.
Sure.
This morning, I received a WhatsApp from him.
Yeah.
He knows that if I couldn't respond, at the moment he wrote to me, we'll reconnect later today.
Sure.
I've got few mentees. Sure. Today I spoke to one of my PhD students when I was driving.
Sure.
We agreed we'll talk again. So it's about how we navigate
It doesn't have to be this structure.
No.
And meetings.
No. But where necessary, we do organize a sit down.
Okay.
And then break things down, you know, what are the issues? And sometimes there are serious issues, like my mentee in the US.
Yeah.
He needed to discuss, you know, a career move that he wants to make, which was big.
Yeah.
He said, Prof, we need to talk.
Sure.
Then we set up an appointment.
Okay.
When I heard him say, Prof, we need to talk.
Sure,
and then, you know, I can't tell him what to do, but, you know, show him the pros and cons and so on.
Yeah.
Later, he wrote to me, said, no, I accepted this other job offer.
Sure.
I'm starting in June next year.
Excellent.
So is that, but mentees must also understand. I mean, you get mentees that come and say, you are a vice chancellor, make me a vice chancellor. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that, you know. And some, it's small things, you know, when there are opportunities, you know, let's do this together and so on. Otherwise, if we look forward where we set several days, you know, it's not going to work.
Yes.
Sometimes it's about having coffee.
Yes.
Then we sit down and then we do things.
Yeah.
Together. But if we have this overly structured way, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That is in my case, given my responsibilities.
No, I
don't know in your case, you know.
No, it's
the same.
It's the same. And what I find difficult is you give a talk in one of the sessions, and two or three, four or five people, they're coming up to say, can you please mentor me?
Yeah.
And if one was to say yes to all of them, like you will mentor people for a living from 8 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Yeah, you can. Look, I'm being mentored also. I've got people who are mentoring me.
Yeah.
I reach out to them. I work around the availability, and I'm clear in terms of, you know, if I need advice on certain things, so I need to engage with them. I've got a coach.
When
we set up appointments, I'm there on time. When we meet, there are things that I need us to discuss, and we sit down. I don't just sit there and say, do I get a BMW? Things like that. So we need to deal with such misconceptions about mentoring.
Sure. Yeah. But this has to be done. Yeah. Wow. So
it's important.
We go all the way to chapter 20, and we're not able to cover all the lessons. Perhaps if there is one that you say we shouldn't stop the podcast without addressing, maybe you could pick one that it's super top of mind.
Look, the point that we just touched, of mentorship, I mean, mentorship is critical. And at mentorship, when one thing that I've learned, through the power of mentorship is that when you mentor someone, you're not doing that person a favor.
Sure.
Actually, you might be helping yourself.
Right.
Because you learn a lot. I mean, my mentees, there was a time when my professor, I remember the professor that, one of my professors that mentored me had a Nokia 3210. And the good prof couldn't set the time. And I was like, prof, come on. He's a young man. And then I set the time for him. Now I struggle with some of the tech things. No, I'll confess, And now my mentees, the other day, I didn't know. I was impressed that this mentee could write certain things in bold on a WhatsApp. So I'm like, how do you get to make this in bold? These guys seem to know some of the latest cases, So we learn from each other. So this symbiotic relationship, this is what I'm getting to. So when you mentor somebody else, it's not like you are doing them a favor. You also learn.
Sure.
In the book, there is a chapter on symbiosis.
Yes, it's chapter 2.
Yeah, take oxpeckers.
Mm.
You see them, sitting on a buffalo.
Yeah.
They are doing an essential service because they are clearing some ticks, the skin of the buffaloes and so on. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship. You learn from each other.
Sure.
So we need to build on that. But it can also take an interesting turn.
Okay.
I was a karate student for many years.
You were a karate student?
Yeah, I was a Kyokushin Kaikan Oyama Karateka. And I learned a lot, in terms of resilience and hard work and so on. And I write about him in this book and also in the previous book, my karate instructor.
Sure.
I learned a lot from him because I was a dirty fighter when I was growing up,
Okay.
I would grab rocks, you better run, But after I started joining karate, I was disciplined. I was even the secretary of the dojo.
Okay.
And I remember one of the interesting stories. There were some ill-disciplined karatekas that I wanted us to kick out of the dojo.
Okay.
And, our karate instructor set me down. He said, no, this is not a good thing. These guys with the skills they have, because they were beating people up at weddings.
Sure.
I was like, they're bringing the dojo into the name of the dojo into disrepute.
Of course.
He said, no. We must keep them in the dojo so that we can guide them.
Oh, wow.
When they are outside there, they are more dangerous.
Sure.
Then I didn't understand. But later in life, I realized that that was powerful.
Sure.
But the point I'm getting at is that man was the first man who explained to me what it meant to study law. I always wanted to study law because my dad, before he passed, I was 6 years old.
Yeah,
he always said he wanted me to study law. But at the village, nobody could tell me.
Of course.
Yeah, they said a lawyer, somebody studies law
and
lies in court, the criminal walks free. Until I met, his name is Advocate Stevens Ramafuku.
Okay.
He was studying law part-time through UNISA.
Sure.
And teaching maths and physics during the day and training us in the afternoon karate.
Sure.
But guess what?
Yeah.
The power of mentorship. And when I talked to him, what he means to me and how he mentored me,
Sure.
He said, look, when I mentored you, I was not doing you a favor. Actually, I was doing myself a favor.
Right.
Guess what?
Yeah.
He's now my PhD student.
Oh, wow.
And then he refuses to call me by name. He calls me prof. And look, there were no favors. He went through all the processes.
Oh, wow.
So that is the power
of
mentorship.
Excellent.
You know?
Excellent.
So let me leave it there.
Wow. We are at the top of the hour. So we ask all our guests these two questions. One, to give our viewers, our listeners, just one challenge to consider from our conversations and from your work of leadership. And the second thing, we ask you to recommend a book, but we have one already. Maybe you could just tell us where our viewers might be able to find the book.
Yeah. This book is available at Exclusive Books.
Yeah.
And an important point that I must mention is that the royalties, you know, from the sales of this book, you know, go to the Mbedi family bursary.
Excellent.
For studies in neurodiversity.
Wow.
So it supports the bursaries who already contribute a lot of money in this. So whatever comes pops up, so we can give bursaries to more students.
Okay.
This is the third year this bursary is running. So
please say more.
This will help us, yeah.
Please say more about the bursary.
Yeah, it's for master students, because we thought at master's level we need people who research how teachers can empower students students in neurodiverse students. Mm-hmm. These are students who are born with Down syndrome, mm-hmm. autism, and so on.
Sure.
Yeah, we've seen this do well. The students that benefited from this summer now doing PhDs, they're doing really good work.
Excellent.
And we think if we can get studies done and get more well-trained people in this space, we can help more students.
Sure.
So that is something we're passionate about.
Sure. And more details of that, where do people find more details on the bursary and sort of the program?
Yeah, the program, I would advise them to visit the UJ website. The Faculty of Education, there's a center for neurodiversity, and it's based at our Soweto campus. And some of the money, we set it aside because they've got a facility where psychologists can assess the kids and produce reports.
Sure.
Because to develop proper interventions, you need to assess a kid so that you can have proper interventions.
Yeah.
And many kids are not properly assessed.
Sure.
So some of the money that we have donated as a family goes into assessment. So if they could visit that website, then they'll be able to help.
Sure.
But the book is also available on other online platforms. So if they could Google it, they'll find it.
Yeah.
In terms of leadership, one thing that I would urge the viewers to do and listeners to do is, let's make it our business to empower other people. And in doing that, let's remember that leadership is not about positions.
Sure.
We are all leaders, you know. If we could embrace that type of mentality, we'll make a huge difference.
Yeah.
People tend to think you need to have a position to be a leader, to empower others, you know. You need to have people follow us. Mm. You don't need that. You know, you can lead in your own way. Starting with simple things. If there's trash, you know, lying, you know, next to the road, pick it up.
Sure.
You know, kids misbehaving. Mm. You know, young men misbehaving. You know, give them brotherly love. You know, tell them, you know, that this is not the right way to do. Guide. You know, I mean, we had people, you know, that guided us and told us, you know, this is not the right way. And those lessons will take us forward.
Absolutely.
This is what I would say. So leadership is not about positions.
Excellent.
We are all leaders.
Lovely. Oh, Prof, thank you so much.
Thank you
for your work at UJ, for the work that you're doing with this book.
Thank you.
We look forward to the third one.
Yeah.
Massive, massive thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.